what it means to be literate in the digital age is shifting. And, you know, it's not something that we can kind of pinpoint and say, if you do these X number of things, you will be literate. It's a moving target now. There's a tone deafness when it comes to the realities of what is happening in schools, because a lot of assumptions are made, and a lot of assumptions are made about what schools need. We should have learning experiences that explore the environmental impacts of AI. And we should have learning experiences that ensure that critical thinking doesn't get lost along the way because we're, you know, quote unquote, having the AI do all the things for us.
Welcome, everybody, to the AMP211 podcast. I am joined, as always, by my incredible co-host, Rebecca Boltzma. Rebecca, where are you and how are you?
I am at home in Canada, and I am doing well. I'm excited to be here. I love talking to Bill, so I think we've got a really good episode lined up today.
I do, too. And speaking of Bill, we are joined today by the Innovation Coordinator for Parkway School District in Chesterfield, Missouri, the incredible Bill Bass. How are you doing today, Bill?
I'm doing great. It's really good to be here. Thanks for having me. It's good to see you all.
Same here, Bill. Yeah, we've been really fortunate that we just both got back from San Diego. That's where we met, on a rooftop for a Digital Promise party, I think about 4 years ago, almost exactly to the day. And we've kept in community. And you've obviously been one of the leading voices in education and innovation and access. And so we are so excited to have this conversation with you today. Welcome to the AMP211 podcast.
That's very kind of you. I really, every day when I think about the work that I do, I just try to make things better for kids. And, you know, and try to do that a little more broadly than just in my space. And so I know I have been very fortunate in my career to meet folks and, you know, have whatever modicum of influence that I have had on the space. And so I'm really, I just feel really fortunate to have the career that I've had.
Absolutely. And so for our listeners out there, you know, we've been fortunate, Rebecca and I, that we've gotten a chance to obviously learn about this extensive career you have. Here's your chance to, we appreciate if you can be not humble for a second, because you do have many accolades that I do want our listeners to know about, just to frame today's conversation. So if you could, maybe share with folks out there what your journey's been in education and some of the different organizations or different places where you've lended your expertise in this field.
Yeah, I'd be happy to. So I started off my career in the late 1900s as a high school English teacher. It was, you know, it was a different time then. I thought that my career was going to be centered around teaching kids how to write and teaching kids how to read. And I did that, I used to be able to say about half of my career was spent doing that. Is no longer half of my career. Let's just say that I'm one of the more mature voices in the room sometimes when we all get together. But I taught high school English, taught middle school English for a little while. I became a tech coach because really what happened was I was thrust into a classroom to teach a class on modern media in my high school English class. And, you know, it wasn't so modern when I acquired the class. And I thought that we probably had opportunity here to do something different. And it had a bank of computers that were running Windows 98. And so, you know, like I said, it's been a day or two, but in those computers, you know, like I was just like, I'm going to have to figure out what to do with these. And so I got master's in instructional technology, and that kind of took me down that technology path. You know, when I was in college, I took one computer class, the one requisite class that every teacher had to take that had, you know, a flashing green cursor at you, because that's what I had to do, right? And yeah, that changed a lot of things when I started teaching that class. And I quickly found my place in education, got my master's, became a tech coach, became an instructional coach. And for the last 12 years now, I've been a district administrator responsible for innovation in my district. Along the way, I was able to, I started getting involved in organizations. And so I became the secondary representative for the National Council of Teachers of English board. That was my first like national board. After that, I stayed involved there, but became more involved in ISTE and ended up on the board and ended up president ISTE. And so that brought a whole different perspective and a whole different level of just experiences that I, again, super fortunate to have had those and to be able to say that I, you know, was part of a lot of the work that has led up to, you know, where ISTE is today, ISTE, ASCD, you know, that merger was something that I wasn't involved in directly, but I think, you know, like my work kind of set the stage for that, for the ability, the organization to be ready to do a merger with another organization and still retain the, you know, like kind of what made ISTE, ISTE. And so, you know, tried to, oh, and it was during COVID too. So the fact that we, that ISTE still exists after COVID, you're welcome, is what I would say to that. It was the CEO and I, Richard Collada, we would talk almost daily and it was never good news. It was always something. And so we just, you know, but we're on the other side, we're solvent. Our membership continues to grow. And now as past president, I am just kind of always on call as opposed to the in the everyday. And so that's a nice shift. It's a nice shift for me to be able to do that. And it allows me to do other things, you know? And so that's, I think those are the highlights, let's say. That's my highlight reel, as it were.
That's quite an impressive one. And, you know, again, it spans millenniums. It spans the bridges technology, right? You're talking about you've survived both sides of the pandemic and you've led through it. And like you said, a lot of the innovative changes, especially like with ISTE at the forefront, it sounds like you've really helped navigate that. So I want to say thank you as someone who's a proud member of ISTE and someone who does a lot of really exciting, innovative projects with them. Thank you for that. I would love to talk about some of the biggest things that are coming out of the ASU GSV Summit that are happening in AI in general. And I'm going to turn it over to Rebecca to frame some of these questions that are really top of mind with, you know, what's going on April 2026 in the world of AI and innovation. Rebecca, where do you want to kick off today?
So many things. It's such an interesting month for AI. And it sounds like, Bill, you follow it too. I think the stories that are kind of top of mind for me right now, number one is the Claude Mythos / non-release release. For our listeners who aren't aware, Claude kind of announced a couple of weeks ago, they have a new model that is incredibly powerful. So powerful, they are not planning to release it to the public because they realize it has the ability to find and then hack vulnerabilities in just about every major system that exists. So what they did instead is pull in major CEOs and major players in companies like Amazon and all of these big companies that run major critical infrastructure in the United States to give them a limited preview of this so they could test it against their infrastructure to find the vulnerabilities and hopefully fix it before this AI ends up in the hands of people who would have less pure intentions with it. And that kind of freaks a lot of people out, which kind of leads over to the other thing that we're seeing, Bill, a real kind of violent plot twist in how people are feeling about AI right now. So this month alone, there have been attacks on the homes of CEOs of AI companies. We've had major ousters by public officials in towns and cities after they've agreed to data centers, and the communities have fought back against those things. And even most recently, Reese Witherspoon went online and told women they needed to get involved in AI because not enough women were understanding it, and it was not well received. So I guess my question for you, this idea where there's like these amazing advances in AI happening, but simultaneously we're seeing kind of a twist in public opinion. I'd love to get your read on that and see how far that's filtering down and how and if that's reaching you and you're noticing any part of that where you sit right now.
Yeah, it is super interesting where to see the landscape is, because that's really what I kind of think of it as, this landscape where we have I always expect peaks and valleys, right? I always expect anytime we have a technology that's going to be influential, that's powerful, or that changes the way we think about things, that matters. And we have to be really cognizant of how that's going to impact us. One of the things that I was fortunate a few years ago to be part of, I said that I was part of NCTE. And one of the things that they did was they created a definition for literacy in the digital age. And so I was part of the team that wrote it initially, and initially it was for 21st century skills. Happily, we've revised it twice, then we moved away from 21st century skills as a moniker. But in that, one of my favorite lines that I quote regularly is that as technology and society change, so does what it means to be literate. And when I think about this specifically, like as an English teacher, right? I see the world through story. I see the world through through writing and literacy, really. And literacy can mean a lot of different things, but what it means to be literate in the digital age is shifting. And you know, it's not something that we can kind of pinpoint and say, if you do these X number of things, you will be literate. It's a moving target now, where it always kind of was, but not to this extent. You know, like the definition almost changes daily. And so when I think about, you know, these shifts that we're seeing in technology, and as you say, the rapid pace and the fact that we're seeing, you know, CEOs' homes being threatened and things like that's the when technology and society, those are at odds in right now, right? And it's not like nobody's ever always just all in, I'm going to embrace everything around technology. Like that's not how we roll, and that's fine. But much like there's a divide in just our society, we're seeing that divide in technology as well and our usage of technology. And when we're talking about, you know, I have 18,000 kids in my district. And when I'm talking about that, and I'm talking about the 29 schools that we have, that means I have 29 communities that are all in different places. And even inside those communities, I have parents and I have teachers who are like, under no circumstances will my kid ever touch AI. Impossible, right? And we have this conversation. But then on the other side, we have, you know, people that are wondering why we're not pushing AI harder. And so in the same community, we have this schism between these two groups that is, it's managing that and trying to, you know, find that happy space in between is almost impossible. And then, you know, and beyond AI, we're just, you know, we're talking about screen time. We're talking about cell phones. We're talking about the technology that is part of our lives, trying to remove it from our lives in a school setting. And that's troubling for me as someone who has done technology their entire career, right? That's troubling for me because I think about my own kids. I have 22-year-old kids. I have twins, and they see the world similarly, but very differently. But everything that they have, that they are creating now in their college career, everything that they are experiencing is influencing the things that they do and the way that they think about the world. And that's great. And I'm not a proponent for like eliminating that, but I'm also not a proponent for saying that just because one set of people doesn't want to use a specific technology, that makes the technology bad, right? And so we're demonizing this thing that has really good things, but it's the intentions that we bring to it, right? It's because adults suck just as much as kids sometimes, right? I mean, we all make decisions. And so I would much rather help kids make decisions when they can make mistakes and I can help them, as opposed to leave them to their own devices. And when they get out of the school setting and into real life, they don't have that direction. And so we're trying to create this inauthentic space in a school where the authentic space in real life has that technology, but we're trying to keep it out of our learning spaces. And so, like, I understand it, right? I understand why. I have a hard time with that because I don't think that we're preparing kids we should be wary. I mean, like, let's be clear. We should pay attention. We should not just go all in on anything, but we can't ignore the fact that if we don't have technologies, if we're not talking about AI in schools, then we're doing a disservice to our kids when it all is said and done, because they won't have the structured conversations about it and the perspective that comes with multiple classes and multiple teachers and multiple kids all engaging in conversation around this topic. And so I do worry about what I would consider a tech backlash, because I think we're creating inauthentic spaces, even under the guise that kids will learn better. And we don't actually know, because a lot of times, I mean, there's plenty of research on both sides, and there's plenty of things that say if we create experiences for kids that are inauthentic and that aren't relevant for their life and all of that, then they're not going to be interested in learning those things. And as soon as they leave school, they're in a tech-rich space. So what's the, you know, like this dichotomy, we're trying to preserve a society and a time that doesn't exist anymore in our reality. And so that's why schools are in a rough space right now. We keep trying to figure out how to respond to the needs of our community, which we need to do, while at the same time supporting kids in the world that they're going to move into.
I just want to first say, like, for our listeners out there, so Rebecca, myself, Bill, you know, like, we've been in numerous districts across the country, and many people express what Bill's saying, but like, they don't have the privilege of someone like a Bill or myself or Rebecca that we get to actually engage with school districts nationwide, and Rebecca's case even more. And so first, I just want to say, like, thank you for sharing that narrative, because one, we're going to talk more about your emerging technologies, guidelines that you're providing, but you're the past president of ISTE. You're on the cutting edge of innovation. And that story you just told is the story we hear everywhere. So, like, we always tell people, the fact that you're even having these conversations, engaging your community, that's step one, and you're doing that. But, like, I also want to make sure people hear it's so important that if you're struggling with this, with all of your knowledge and all the things you're able to see, that's almost, I hope, gives everyone the empowerment to realize, like, you're going to be struggling with this, but that doesn't mean you don't do it. And so, maybe for our listeners, could you share what this emerging technologies guidance you're providing is, kind of where your community was? Because I'm making an assumption based on your previous work that you're building upon things you've done pre-generative AI becoming ubiquitous in schools. And then how do you hold space for the fact that people are trying to grapple with this? And so how do you ensure maybe you have a vocal minority, that their voice is heard, it's accounted for, and yet you're still trying to move forward with emerging technology for the best use of, you know, the overwhelming majority of your students? A lot of questions there, but we'll let you unpack it. And then, Rebecca, I apologize. We're going to turn it back over to you after this.
There is a lot there. I would say, so first, let me say that it is, speaking to the fact that we were just both in San Diego for ASU-GSV, one of the things that I found kind of remarkable is the number of people who didn't know that this was kind of the plight of schools. As I was talking to, you know, like, different folks that are in companies, or they are thinking through the lens of, you know, as an ed tech provider or something like that, there were an amazing amount of people, not everyone, obviously, right? Painting with a very broad brush here. But the fact is that there's a tone deafness when it comes to, in some cases, not all, obviously, right? But when it comes to the realities of what is happening in schools. Because a lot of assumptions are made, and a lot of assumptions are made about what schools need, in a lot of cases without actually talking to schools, which is problematic in and of itself. But the fact is that we're not in agreement, you know, as to where we need to be and where we need to go. So one of the things that we did, to get to your actual questions, one of the things that we did was, a number of years ago, you know, we've always been a tech-rich school. We were doing a lot of people moved over to kind of a one-to-one environment during COVID out of necessity, right? We're 11 years into our, and we call it our access program, because it's not just about the device, right? The device I'm less concerned with, but it's about devices, it's about content, and it's about experiences. And we wanted to provide access to those three things. And so in digital spaces, specifically, like utilizing technology. So we want, you know, we can have the device, but you have to have access to the internet at home. So we worked on, you know, kind of quote unquote solving that. Still haven't gotten 100%, but we're, you know, like this is work that is ongoing. There's not an end finish line here. And then we work to create access to digital content. So which means that, okay, so you have device, you have the internet. Now you have to have content in order to engage with and not just content, but experiences further. So we want the kids to have all of these things, all access to each one of these things in order to become, you know, citizens of the digital age is kind of how we approach this. From there, we recognized that we needed to better document how we make decisions, right? And so it's not just that, you know, somebody makes a request and it's at the whim of Bill on any given day. Like we needed to do better than that. We needed to actually have, these are why we make the decisions we are making. And so it doesn't matter who is sitting in my seat or who is a part of the culture that we have been creating in Parkway. And so we created these technology commitments, instructional technology commitments that we made to our families. And those commitments, I mean, they're pretty simple. Basically, we only have five. And so when we were making those, it was so that we would be able to say, these are the things, these are a rationale for why we do these things. And so one of the things, I'll just read them to you real quick. I mean, there's only five. The first one was we want to create a balanced approach to student learning, right? And so, and this goes, this gets to that screen time, this gets to that, you know, technology backlash. We don't want kids to be 100%, the least interesting thing a kid can do on a computer is flick through slides and, you know, answer some questions. That is not what technology is designed for when it comes to learning. Now, it is the point of least resistance, right? In a lot of cases, but that's not going to help, right? And so we want to create that balanced approach to student learning so that students can decide when technology is appropriate and when technology is not appropriate, because we're not supporting them for being in school. So that was our first commitment. Our second one is to enhance students' educational experiences through the use of technology. Very similar to the first, right? But it does lend itself to the fact that we want kids to, we don't want them to just, you know, word process the entire time, right? There are opportunities for creation. There's opportunities for exploration, simulation. I mean, there's so many ways that they can approach this, but we had to commit to our community that we were going to use technology in really intentional ways, right? And so these digital tools that we adopt, because we know that we only have so much time in front of kids, and we have to use that time really intentionally, right? And we can only put so many things in front of them. And so that's our second one. The third one is develop a safe digital environment where students are able to learn from mistakes. I make mistakes. That's right on. I mean, I make mistakes every day. That's how we learn things, right? But if we take away every opportunity for them to make mistakes, because maybe we're over-monitoring them, or maybe we're blocking everything, or maybe we aren't utilizing technology to address the issues that are coming up and all that. Yeah, we need safety measures, but if we're not actually using technology and providing a space for them to make mistakes, we're missing the boat on that, because they're going to make mistakes. It's just who's going to be able to support them on the other side of that, on the other side of those mistakes. The fourth one is support students in their digital wellness, which I think is something that we continue to think about. We don't want kids addicted to screens and things like that. We don't want adults addicted to screens either, right? But we do want to be sure that they understand and know how to make decisions, because they are going to be living in a space where technology is readily available to them. And then the last one is just advancing digital equity, and making sure that it's not just kids that have access to, that have the means to have access to devices in their home, but it's if we're going to ask you to do something, then we better provide access to that thing. And so, you know, going back to, like I said before, device, internet, content, experiences, all four of those things, we need to have opportunities for all of our kids, not just the ones who can, you know, maybe afford to go to a camp or afford to, you know, have those experiences outside of school. We want to bring those and give them the opportunities to have them inside of school. And right now, AI gives us, like, this is one of those things that we have to provide experiences around. And so these tech commitments are kind of the hallmark. This is why we make our decisions. If it doesn't go with one of these, it has to be magic, right? It has to be the best thing we've ever seen and is going to do all the things that we want. But I haven't found it yet. So these are these tech commitments really guide us. And so we put those in place a few years ago. And that has led us now to, you know, the state of Missouri has the School Board Association has an AI policy that they are asking us to adopt. And not asking, but suggesting. Let's say it that way instead. And I read it and it's fine, except that, you know, board policies take a lot to get across the line, right? And so this is not going to be AI, you know, and AI as we currently define it is not going to be the last technology that is disruptive in schools. And so what we're doing instead is it's going to go to our board, but we're trying to create an opportunity for our board to look at emerging technologies and have a policy around emerging technologies as opposed to AI specifically. Because by the time we get a pass, I'm going to have to revise it again. And it's going to be on every board meeting that we go to. With an emerging technologies policy, we can say, we want to keep kids safe. We want to ensure that they understand the technology and how to use it, if it is in fact safe and the risks that go along with that. We want to support our teachers with professional development so that they understand how to utilize this with kids, if it's appropriate to utilize with kids. And then we want to say that we're not going to shy away from emerging technologies just because they're emerging. Like, those are in broad strokes, those are the things that we stand on when it comes to our policy. Now, underneath that, we're going to have guidelines. We're going to have a guidebook. We're going to, you know, I mean, we already have developed a lot of stuff that goes along with supporting AI specifically and teachers using AI. But that doesn't mean that I need a policy for my board that is going to be outdated and that we have to comply with when those emerging technologies ultimately change what it is that we need to do and teach. And so that has been our approach so far. And it has been well received, because it's not about the technology per se, it's or the platform or whatever. It is about how we approach our work through our technologies. And I think that shifts the conversation a little bit and makes it less scary too. Because we can say, you know, under our board policies, here are all the things you can and can't do. But what a horrible way to approach board policy. You know, we need, rather than large P policy, let's create some small P procedures and policies that go along with, you know, the work that we do. And so academic integrity, we already have a policy for that. We don't need a new one because AI has, everybody's scared of AI. We need to understand how that, we need to translate it. We need to translate our academic integrity policy into an artificial intelligence space.
That's fantastic. That's actually, as like someone who does a lot in governance with AI and ethics, that's exactly what I recommend as well. Having these more policy level things that no matter how the technology changes, you don't have to change these things. And you have administrative procedures that are a little bit more agile that admin can adapt as we go, but then handbooks that adapt as well. I think my favorite part is focusing on teaching kids about making responsible choices with the technology. My current research right now and what I've spent the last month doing is documenting every single deepfake case in K-12 that have happened over the last 3 years, gathering every single story, every single institutional response, every single community reaction, and mapping those and looking for trends. And some of the outcomes of that is a board hurries and rushes to put a policy through that bans deepfakes, which like makes no sense, right? Like there are things that already go, you know, around that. And I think the more reasonable reaction, as you mentioned, is to be more proactive, make sure kids understand responsible use of technology, emerging technology, whatever that is, and having that commitment be to raise good digital citizens in a world full of emerging technology, rather than be reactive and put policies for every single possible little thing that make it unmanageable. So I think you're doing good things, and I hope other districts sit up and pay attention to doing it that way, because I think that's the way ultimately that's going to work best in the future.
Well, thanks. Yeah, I think it, so. Let me add one piece to that. I think that the, you know, as I've talked to districts and, you know, I, and the policy pieces, there were so many. I remember three years ago, I was at an event, and there was a superintendent there that was very, very proud of their policy that they just got through the board. And I was like, wow, okay. I mean, that's great. I do your thing. If that's what your community needs, then that's what you should do, right? And I feel like that's the, you have to know your community in order to know the approach that you take. And so I think that's what I hear in what you're saying, Rebecca, that it is about leadership and it is about going forward, but it's also understanding your community, what they need, and then understanding the impact that any of those policies that you are creating or anything that you are, the guidelines and all that, the impact that that's going to have on your community. And that's a really important piece to unpack and make sure that you're being intentional about it and not just reacting because, you know, you got a nasty gram email from somebody who is irritated with you.
I think if you can build those commitments too on top of your existing mission, vision, and values that you have as a district, it's easy to point and say, well, we did this because these are our values. And it ties back to like the foundational commitments that you have as a district and things that you value. It's hard to dispute those things, right? Like, because we value student learning on our website or whatever it is, that's why we've implemented this as kind of a core pillar of the work that we're doing moving forward. And I think being able to articulate the why behind all of these things ultimately is what matters and helps get people on board when they maybe don't understand or they've been influenced a certain way by media or friends or community or a little piece of something that they picked up that they don't fully understand, especially in the community, which speaks more to that kind of level of understanding that people have and don't have, which, taking another step back, I think fundamentally, the fact that we've rolled it all into this big AI heading, the AI that powers your Netflix is the same thing we're talking about with data centers, is the same thing we're talking about with deep fakes. And it's just this big, ambiguous, scary thing that has so many things all rolled into one giant ball. And I just think we can do better at picking that apart and identifying the parts that are useful, the parts we should be worried about, instead of just rolling it into this nebulous AI bubble ball that doesn't necessarily truly reflect the technology in any sort of meaningful way.
Yeah, I would agree. And mostly because, you know, this is what I hear. I talked with a parent recently that doesn't want her kids on their Chromebooks. And then in the very next sentence asked why we're not teaching them to type effectively. And so, you know, like I understand the sentiment, but it is because of, you know, AI. And we look at one of the things that I hear almost every other day is that, you know, I have students who don't want to want us to turn off AI because of the environmental impacts. And we have parents who are saying they don't want their kids to use AI because they're no longer going to be able to think critically. And I understand the sentiment behind all these things, but the fact is that the design of our lessons and our learning experiences are what's going to guide some of like those pieces. And we should have learning experiences that explore the environmental impacts of AI. And we should have learning experiences that ensure that critical thinking doesn't get lost along the way because we're, you know, quote unquote, having the AI do all the things for us.
Bill, I'd love to ask if this is something that's on your roadmap. You said a couple things, and you know, you're pointing out the the knots that you as a leader of innovation are can get yourself into when a parent says two things that seem opposed to each other. Do you ever do things like, or is your district in the process of kind of what you just said, right? So like, we want our students to use deeper thinking. So like, here's ways that AI can, by using AI in this way in a lesson or in a curriculum, this is the moments where AI can lead to deeper thinking or deeper learning. Do you align it to any of like the frameworks like ISTE's, like attributes of an AI ready graduate? And how do you explain that to a parent? Like you said, like there is a time and place to learn typing. So like this idea of like, I don't like this term, but this is what a lot of people are using, like good screen time, and like explaining why that is the best. If your goal is to deeper learn or something, that's the best use of a screen. That is why you would want to use a screen in this case versus what you mentioned before about like just having kids, you know, basically just turn worksheets into things that they could just do online or like a PowerPoint. How do you help people see that that might just not have the understanding and only are getting bits and pieces of the narrative?
When one of the things that I learned about leadership, specifically with ISTE, is that, you know, sometimes you have to make unpopular decisions, right? And sometimes you have to say no to really good things because of capacity, because of, you know, in schools cases, because of laws, because of your community's readiness, right? And so rather than focus on what we try to do is rather than focus on what we can't do, right, we try to focus on the opportunities that exist. And so we can lament, you know, some of the decisions that are made that are outside of our control. But that doesn't necessarily matter, right? Because they're outside of our control. It's not something that we can do. But what we can do is we can be sure that we're celebrating the good things that are coming. We're ensuring that our, you know, as we work with parents and as we have student focus groups and as we do parent surveys and as we engage our community in different ways, what we can do is we can take those opportunities to educate and not try to convince. It's not, you know, one of the things through our guidelines, our AI guidelines, one of the things that we really tried hard not to do was suggest that every teacher needs to use AI every day in some way, right? We didn't want that level of directiveness. What we wanted to do is open the door where innovation can occur. And, you know, a lot of times in my position, people ask me, you know, like, well, I don't understand what your title even means, which, I mean, it's made up, let's be clear. But when we are, like, what I try to do is set the stage where innovation can occur, right? And create a culture of innovation throughout our organization. And I understand that that doesn't mean that I'm going to hit every classroom, because culture doesn't mean everyone, right? It means our approach that we are taking in this time is something that we need to, is where we're going to invite thinking about things differently. And so it's kind of like an invitation to innovation, right? And so if you're not down, that's fine. And so, and I'm not going to make you, I'm not going to be the AI police or anything like that, but I am going to support you in those things that you're trying to do, because I want that to trickle down to our students, right? In lots of different ways. And so, yeah, we, you know, like when we did our, you know, I mean, call it what you want, portrait of a graduate, we have vision for a learner, like that's, everybody is calling their thing, right? But it's essentially portrait of a graduate work. And what I liken that to, and this is where we tied all of our AI stuff to, was our vision for a learner. And the reason we did that was because it was something that our community had already accepted, like it was part of our culture. It was something that we had, you know, we had committed to, and, you know, our mission and vision supports it as well. But by tying the reasons, and we kind of interpreted that down for to tie the reasons that we're doing things with AI and providing examples and supporting our teachers and celebrating amazing things that they're doing in their classrooms, by tying it to that vision for a learner, we can show what that means. And ultimately, the vision for a learner is much like the ISTE standards, right? Just the and this is another thing that I learned along the way, is when the ISTE standards were created, like, it was very much, this is what we want kids to do with technology. Right? We want them to be able to word process. We want them to be able to edit images and things like that. These were earlier iterations. Well, around 2016, those shifted. And I was fortunate. I was on the board then, and I recognized this shift from what we want kids to do to who we want them to be. Right? And so the ISTE standards now, I mean, going through them, we want them to be creative communicators. We want them to be digital citizens. You know, like, there's things that we want them to be. That's what Vision for a Learner is. We want them to be these things. And in order for them to be these things, here's how that translates down into using the tools or the approach that AI comes with in order to get kids into this space. And if we want kids to be these things, our adults better be these things, right? If we want them to be learners, our adults have to be learners. And we have to have culture around each one of these pillars that we stand on. And so that has become our approach, is to tie it to something that we are already doing. And we've already said, this is what we're doing. Well, here's the interpretation of how it can be done with AI, or how it can be done with technology, or how it can be done without either one of those things, based on circumstance and based on the fact that we want kids to be self-reliant, and when they leave us, that they're going to be ready to face the digital world and be a part of the digital world, as opposed to being scared of the digital world and make their own decisions along the way. And that's when, in education, we talk about student agency all the time. That's student agency, being able to decide when and why and how to use these tools. That is bringing yourself to the technology, not utilizing the technology as somebody else designed it for you.
This is so helpful, because again, we do a lot of this work, and you said at the start, this idea of, like, you've learned a lot of things about leadership, and ultimately that's really what you're describing, is how do you lead people through change? And most importantly, it's what you're doing, you can find the research to find some best practices, like what Rebecca was speaking about. Like, you can find people like Rebecca to provide you the research, and you can even find people like Rebecca to give you the next steps in the plan. But the implementation and leading people through change is probably where most school districts, if they're ready to accept this, are going to struggle. So I just want to thank you again for, like, leading people through this narrative. I do want to give you a chance, Bill. You know, you're traveling the country. You've done many things in your career, but podcast host, I don't think I heard you say, is one of them. But we're going to turn the tables right now. We're going to give you a chance to ask Rebecca and I. You get full reign of the Amp to 11 podcast right now. What's a question or a burning question you'd like to ask us that we might be able to share, you know, an answer for you and our listeners?
Yeah. Well, so I appreciate that. And one of the things, it's actually really funny that you say, I have not created my own podcast. But back in 2005, I taught kids how to podcast. And it was much harder then, incidentally. Like, we had to write our own RSS feeds in order to distribute them. And this was before, like, Apple put out the iTunes store. And so it was, like, it was early days. But I taught kids more about storytelling and creating and broadcasting through the creation of podcasts. It was awesome. It was hard, but it was awesome. So here would be my question for the two of you. When a lot of times, and I've said it myself, is that, you know, we talk about, for the longest time, I used to talk about how I want kids to consume less and create more, right? And AI and technology just in general, but AI specifically, has given us great opportunity to create, right? My stance has kind of changed on this, where I don't necessarily want them to consume less. I just want them to create more, because I recognize that creation requires influence, and that influence you get when you consume, right? So everything that you consume influences something you create. And so as you are thinking and seeing people out in the world, in the schools that you work with, and the leaders that you interact with, what are the things that What are the things you're excited about that people are creating out in the world right now? Specific, you know, and whether that is inside of a school or just, you know, like kids or adults in education, like what are the things that you think are exciting that are going to that people are creating in our space these days?
I personally am loving the workflows and the agents and the tools people are building that alleviate their pain points. I love seeing the way that people are identifying something that's been a challenge forever and ever, and within a few hours, finding a way to solve that problem. I've done it even just in my research, right? Like sending out swarms of agents specifically to school sites to find deeply buried statements about incidents that I want to look at, or to be able to find signal in noise easier, or to track workflows that I'm working on. Andre Carpathy, who is like one of the most brilliant foundational minds in AI, posted a couple of weeks ago about how he uses AI and Obsidian to build his own personal wiki, which I took and I built. And it takes everything I've ever bookmarked or read or everything, and it maps it into a giant wiki and maps those nodes all onto each other. So it's a giant knowledge base of my whole life and everything I've ever consumed and found value in, and maps them together so that if I want to suddenly like remember that thing I read about this and how it might map to this, that's all available to me now. And that solves a pain point for me, which is, you know, I read this thing, I consume like all of these great papers and everything, but can't quite remember. And now that's solved that problem of making that and servicing that and making it available for me, and having agents that do things that don't burn me out by the time I get to the actual work, so that I feel more fresh, right? Like agents that will go out and find the things that I need that I would find interesting, and surfacing things that align with things that I agree with or want to dig deeper into. On a smaller level, just seeing teachers, there's a woman named Kelsey from Ohio who she just built like a gem in Google Gem that alleviated her biggest pain point, which was subplans. And she has a gem now that anytime she needs a subplan, it generates it for her in under 30 seconds. And before, and I've talked to so many teachers who are like, you know what, I would rather just come to school not well than have to sort out a subplan. And that solves a pain problem. So I think in terms of what people are creative, I just love seeing people being able to actually do something about their biggest pain point, when before it was just like, this part of my job sucks and it's hard and it's draining me, but there's nothing I can do about it. Now seeing that solutions focus and the actual ability to solve those problems, which I hope leads to people enjoying what they do more or freeing them up. It does certainly for me. Things that used to take me till 1 p.m. can now be done in 30 minutes by an agent before 8 a.m. that get me set up for success. So I think that would be my answer in a really broad way.
Yeah. I think to echo some of the things Rebecca said is, one, seeing a shift in mindset. And so this idea, you know, and Bill, you've already kind of spoken to this idea of like, there's still a lot of people, for rightfully so, who like, they still see some of these problems in education as they're just baked into the system at this point. And I totally get that, because if you've spent your whole career trying to fight against these like barriers that just have seemed immovable, it's hard to shift your mindset and get unstuck. But I'm seeing that more and more, like Rebecca's case of like, start with an actual problem. Don't expect AI to provide solutions to problems that don't exist or problems you can't address or identify. But once you've identified a problem, that's where a tool like AI can start to shift mindset and show you there's ways to just repurpose or reconfigure the resources and strategies you have to try to solve something. So that's one, is when people get the chance, and I would love to learn how to do this at better scale, but a lot of time it really is just giving people either a walkthrough or sitting with them and just helping them unlock something, and then they get it. So again, that's slow at scale, but it's the most important thing I'm seeing, is just getting people that first aha moment. And then the second thing, like Rebecca said, is educators themselves. So like seeing joy return to people, because it really sparks a creativity. And you know, all teachers are artists, and the fact that they have to create lessons every day, and to see that they can do it now in a way that they might be a veteran teacher or a new teacher, and just they have another tool in their toolbox that makes them feel just good about going in and differentiating learning or making it more engaging or knowing how their students really want to learn. That's been probably the most fun. And I've seen so many teachers, educators, leaders say some version of like, it's fun again to teach. It's fun again to create. And I think that post-COVID, as you mentioned before, is probably what people needed. And even though there are a lot of pain points with like teacher exodus and retention and hiring, for those people that see that, it's like a breath of fresh air that we just want to keep giving to more and more people. So that's been probably the most exciting things I've seen in the space the last few years.
That's great. That's great. And I think, you know, you both brought up different but interesting points where it is, you know, it's really about empowerment of people who, this is stronger than I mean, but in some ways had lost some of the hope that they had and Brett, I think you said it, joy in their work and in, you know, in figuring out their workflows or, you know, all the things that we hate to do, just like bringing all of that together. It really is empowering. And that's, you know, to shift the focus back to me for a moment, that's what we want to do with kids, right? We want to empower them. And that's what we try to do every day as we're creating these opportunities around technology. It really is about empowering our learners and think about it in terms of learners very broadly.
Great answer. That's what we like to hear. I think we're all saying the same things. Yeah, I don't think the goal is to just teach kids to use AI for everything. It's to teach them the foundational responsibilities that they have and that digital literacy based on those commitments, and then let them be creative from within those boundaries. Brett, you love to ask our final question. Why don't you go ahead and take it home?
I shall. Thank you. So Bill, you know, you've already shared so much about the organizations you're in community with, you know, the leadership you've provided to some. And so we just like to use this last question to really get broad again of, for folks out there, right? What are either some of the organizations that they should start to explore more, you know, especially our educators, our innovators, our leaders? Who are some people they might want to look towards to find more inspiration, to find more great tips and tricks about AI, innovation, education? This is really a chance to just give flowers and praise people out there in the space that our listeners might not know about, or that they should hear their voice again to remind them that these are excellent people out in the field.
I try to think when I look at questions like this, I try to think about it in terms of, you know, yeah, we have voices that are out in the world, right? And so organizations, obviously, like one of the organizations that I find value in is ISTE. And I also find value in NCTE. They are doing some really good things right now when it comes to AI. And as an English organization, it's an interesting space for them to be in because, you know, a lot of the pushback has come from English teachers, really. And so they're really trying to think differently about it. But, you know, like we have AI for EDU and we have COSIN and we have Digital Promise and we have, there was a project that I was a part of not too long ago that was called Engage AI that, you know, like that a lot of good work is being done out there right now. And so the way that I try to think specifically about people is that I look for attributes as opposed to individuals, right? And so the, you know, like, there's people out there, but I think that the thing that I always want to think about is the authenticity that comes with those folks when they are, you know, like, what is the motive behind their speaking or their writing or whatever it is? Like, what is the motive that comes along with that? Are we trying to create, and I say this not disparagingly, but are we trying to create a career or are we trying to create impact? And I think those are very different things. Right. And so as we're looking at the work that a lot of people are doing, who should you listen to? You should listen to the people who you connect with. You should listen to the folks that will help you serve your community, help you serve your students. You should listen to the folks that aren't necessarily the people who are keynoting everywhere. You should listen to the people that are in classrooms right now talking about and working with AI on any given day that are going to, because they understand what it actually means. And, you know, in a lot of cases, hey, that takes me out of the running here, right? And that's perfectly fine, because I haven't been in a classroom for many years, right? As a daily practice. I'm in classrooms all the time, but I'm not the one who is in the classroom with kids on any given day. And I think that those are the people you listen to. You listen to your colleagues. You listen to the people who are in your district or in your region or who are classroom-based that are going to not just share the magic thing that they created, but who are going to share how they talk to kids about AI, how they teach them to be responsible, how we make kids be the people we want as opposed to do the thing we want them to do. Because I think that's where those are the folks that live it every single day and who are the ones that, if we're not listening to them, then shame on us, really, because we have not empowered them, or we don't value that voice as much as we value the person who is up on stage or who, you know, has written 12 books or, you know, whatever that may be. I think the people that I would encourage everyone, go find that classroom teacher right now in your local school, in your building, whatever, that is talking with kids about AI and uncovering what it means to be in our space right now in education, because they're the ones that I think have the most valuable voice that we can find in education right now.
Well said. No notes. Thank you. Thank you, Bill, for everything, right? You've really shared with our listeners how they can be a leader in this challenging time, but also lead with, you know, inspiration and the right values at the front. And those are great things. You know, we're all out of the running based on what you said, but so important that you're in community with educators on the front lines doing this important work. So just want to thank you again for everything you do in the field of education and innovation. If people want to learn more about how they can learn more from you, is there anywhere they could go and check out at this time?
I think, you know, I'm in lots of spaces. Just billbass.tech is my site. And go there and, you know, LinkedIn, whatever. There are, you know, I'm places. There's no one single source of truth.
All right. So look for Bill Bass wherever you find people on the internet or in the world. Sounds like. Thank you so much, Bill. Thank you to all our listeners. Make sure you make today a jumbo cannoli day, meaning live life to the fullest. And thank you again for listening to the Amped 11 podcast. Everyone have a wonderful day.